Open our Bibles tonight to the book of Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27 now. In a few, probably a month or so, we'll be done with the book of Acts. I've really enjoyed the study through it. It just gives you a historical look at the early church. You can see how the church spread from Jerusalem into the entire known world of that day. And much of that, the Lord used the Apostle Paul. I mean, it just amazes me when you get to thinking about it, that one man can have such an impact, but the Lord can use one man to have such an impact. And indeed, he did have. He loved the Lord. He had a strong zeal to present the gospel to the Jew, but also to the Gentile. And even down to today, we that are Gentiles are exceedingly thankful for the ministry of the Apostle Paul. So, in Acts chapter 27, Paul always wanted to go to Rome. And you can read about that in the book of Romans chapter 1. He expressed a desire to come, and he never started the church at Rome. But he did write an epistle to the church of Rome. And, of course, the book of Romans is one of my favorite books of the entire Bible. But he did write an epistle to him, but he hadn't been there. And God had previously told him, earlier in the book of Acts, that he would eventually be brought to Rome and that he would bear witness of him at Rome. And, well, how he was going to get to Rome is here in chapter 27. As we've looked in the previous weeks, we see that Paul has been on trial and he was in the city of Caesarea. And finally, he was brought before Festus, and then he was brought before King Agrippa II, which is who we looked at last week. And at the end of that, and after he presented the gospel to both Festus and Agrippa and all the prominent people that were there that day, it was done really already decided in the previous chapter, because Paul had appealed to who again? He had made his appeal to Caesar. He was a Roman citizen, and that gave him a hearing at Rome. So actually all this is working together for the good, because it would have been a very expensive project to go to Rome. But as it is, since he's going as a prisoner, it's an expense-paid trip. So you see how the Lord works behind the scenes and works all things out for the good. Now, it might have been an expense-paid trip, but I'm going to tell you right now, it would have been a rough trip that he took. And here in Acts chapter 27, you're going to see the Apostle Paul is going to face a shipwreck. Now, he faced that two other times before, as we're going to probably see tonight. If we get down that far, we'll go to the book of 2 Corinthians. He experienced three shipwrecks. Can you imagine? He experienced a total of three shipwrecks. So, this was something, I don't know, how could you ever get used to a shipwreck? But he experienced a total of three of them. Most include the one that's happening here in chapter 27, as being part of the three. Okay? So let's go ahead and get into chapter 27. We'll look at the details of it. The main part I want to deal with is verse 22 through 25, and I was tempted to just go right to that. But as I begin to do that, I just realized that in verses 1 through 21, that's also God's Word. And if the Lord didn't want you to deal with that, He wouldn't have put it in His book. So since we're going through the book verse by verse, we'll go down through those verses. Also, they're not as meaty as it is down in verse 22 through 25, but it kind of sets the stage for what all is going on. One thing that was interesting about chapter 27, I read this in several different places, some of the most detailed accounts of selling in ancient history is recorded in chapter 27. Some of the most detailed accounts of selling is recorded here in chapter 27. So not only do you have Bible students that study this chapter, but also secular people that are interested in how they went over the Mediterranean Sea and how they sailed and what they did in shipwreck and in storms. They'll go to this text to learn more how they did it. So I thought that was very interesting to know. This is a very detailed account of what a seaman would do whenever they faced a time of shipwreck or a time of a storm. So we'll see all of those things in this particular study. We can entitle really this whole chapter Shipwreck because that's what it's all pointing to. That's what it's all pointing to. Paul's going to go to Rome, all right, just like God said, but he's also going to face a shipwreck on the way there. And God would give him the grace to be able to handle it. So let's go ahead and begin now at verse 1. Now that I've kind of laid the foundation with what we're going to look at. Now, it says in verse 1 of chapter 27, when it was determined that we would sail to Italy. Now, you see the word we. I pointed this out to you several times when we've taught in the book of Luke. Who wrote the book of Acts was Luke. And he doesn't name himself. And what he does, kind of like in the Gospel of John, John never named himself. He'd just say, one whom Jesus loved. That was John. And the book of Luke is the same way, except it uses the term we. And Luke is with the Apostle Paul in verse 1. So when you see that we, that means Luke is with him. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustus band. Now, you'll notice that Paul's a prisoner. I mean, as we said in the beginning in our opening remarks, he's going here as a prisoner. But I tell you, by the end of this story, he's going to be the captain of that ship, you might as well say. He's going to be making a lot of decisions that affects that entire ship. It's amazing how you can take someone that's a servant, a slave, a prisoner, and then by the end of this, he's actually going to be the one that's calling all the shots when you get to the end of the story. So Luke is with him on this journey. If you look down into verse 3, there's another man that's with him that's a Christian man. He's from Macedonia, Thessalonica. His name is Aristarchus. Aristarchus is also with him. And, of course, he's a man of the Church of the Thessalonians. So he's from that particular church, man of Macedonia. Now, when you look up his name in Colossians 4:10, he's a fellow prisoner. So when he goes to Rome, Paul wrote the book of Colossians from Rome, this man is also a prisoner too. So what's really nice about this trip, Paul has two brothers with him. He isn't going there by himself. Of course, God's people are never by themselves, are they? We always have the Lord with us. But it's also good sometimes to have a brother or a sister with you, is it not? So in this case, in this long journey, and if you'll look at this map that I give you, the approximate distance of this trip is going to be 2,130 miles. That's a long trip by sea, is it not? It's going to be a rough trip that they're going to take. Don't you think it would have been very, very, very encouraging to have two Christian brothers with you where they can pray together and they can talk about God together and they can encourage one another? I think God's people need fellowship, don't you think? I think they need fellowship, and I think that's very uplifting, especially in a time of trial. It's good to have brothers and sisters in Christ that can meet together, talk together, and I think that's one of the things that we lack many times is just that good Christian fellowship. Just sitting and enjoying one another's company and enjoying talking about the Lord. I love to talk about the Lord to folk. Just sit and just talk about Him. Talk about how the Lord saved you. Talk about what the Lord does for you. And the other people can really appreciate that as other brothers and sisters in Christ. So here you see that good fellowship that they have, and they would have experienced that this whole journey. The Old Testament says two are better than one. Two are better than one. They have good reward for their labor. If one fall, the other will help the other one up. But woe to him that falls and is alone. So it's good to have brothers and sisters that fellowship together and talk one to another. I think sometimes we become little independent islands. And many times we don't want nobody around us, and that's not a good way of being. We need to, at times, like we have fellowship services, we have fellowship meetings, and it's good to come and take a part of that. I think it's also good to invite people to your home. Have people in and sit down, and somebody in the church maybe you don't know, invite them in and have them come and have coffee or something with you and get to know them. Get to know a little bit about them. That's how you get what? That's how people get close. But many times that just doesn't happen. Here they had Christian fellowship in this journey, and that indeed would have been a really blessed part of this journey. Now, it mentions the name of the centurion, too, in verse 1. I just wanted to point out the "we," and that means Luke. And remember, Aristarchus is also, so you have two saved men with the Apostle Paul in this journey. And it names the centurion as Julius. Julius. It says he's a centurion. Of course, he had been an officer in charge of 100 soldiers. And it names the band that he was a part of, the cohort he was a part of. And that was, or the legion, you could call it the legion also, it was the Augustus Legion. That was what he was a part of. And it names him. Now, what's something about this, what I thought was unique about this man named Julius, is I want you to notice what he does in verse 3. I want you to notice what he does in verse 3. And the next day, we touched at Sidon. Now, Sidon, if you look at your map, you can see where that's at. That was the first stop. See, from Caesarea, and then he goes up to Sidon from point 2 to point 3. Now, that word, that 2 years on your map there was how many years he spent in Caesarea. It doesn't mean that's how long it took him to get from Caesarea to Sidon. That was 70 miles. That was a 70-mile trip. Okay? Sidon was a famous old city. Usually in the Old Testament, it was Sidon and Tyre that was mentioned. These were two famous Phoenician cities. You read about them in the Old Testament. Very rich cities because they was always a seaport city. All the goods came through there on the Mediterranean Sea. Now, notice what this Roman centurion does. It says that Julius courteously entreated Paul. Now, you know what that means? This centurion was kind to him. For some reason, this centurion had took a liking to the Apostle Paul. I don't know, all it tells you about this relationship, I don't know if they grew close while he was a prisoner or what. All I know is this says that Julius courteously entreated Paul, which means he was kind to him. So not only does he have two friends along with him that will strengthen him for this task and this journey, but even the centurion that was overtaking them there, he liked him. He took a shine to him. Do you think that's all of the Lord? Do you think the Lord will send you comfort and strength when you need it? Let me ask that one more time. Do you think the Lord will send you comfort and strength when you need it? And that's what he does right here. He's got a big task. He's been in prison for 2 years. And now he's got a big, long 2,000-mile journey ahead of him. And Lord is sending him companions to encourage him and that he can fellowship with. And even the centurion over the ship or over these men has a liking towards the Apostle Paul. He does something here that's unheard of. You remember, if you was a Roman officer or a guard or a centurion, and your prisoner escaped, you know what they did to you? They killed you. Remember the Philippian jailer whenever the Apostle Paul escaped, or didn't escape, but whenever he could have escaped if he wanted to. Remember the Lord opened all those prison doors? Remember what that jailer got ready to do? He was going to kill himself because he thought his prisoners escaped. They killed you if your prisoner escaped. Okay? Well, look what Julius does for the Apostle Paul. When he came to Sidon, he gave him liberty. That's freedom to go into his friends and to refresh himself. That means he let him get off the boat. And I don't know if they had a church there in Sidon. Many think they did. They probably did. But there was friends of the Apostle Paul there, and he let him go visit with his friends to refresh himself. Now, you know what that shows you? That shows you how much he trusted the Apostle Paul. He knew Paul wouldn't run off. He had that much confidence in him as a man of God. And though he was a Roman and this man was a Jew and was his prisoner, he trusted him to go to his friends to be refreshed. Now, the writers were divided over this thing. John MacArthur taught that this particular word, when it says that he, the word refresh, to refresh himself, John MacArthur seems to think that that means to receive medical attention. And several of the writers thought that perhaps he needed some type of medical attention. And the idea of the word refresh can mean that. And guess also who was with him? There was a doctor with him too. Remember that Luke was the beloved physician. So there might have been a little bit of health issues with him at this time. Folks, he'd been 2 years in prison. Their prisons weren't like our prisons. Altogether different. They were damp, and they were rough places to be in. And he had been 2 years in prison in Caesarea. Think about it. How rough that had been. Did God give him grace? Always does. Won't you hear me one more time? God will always give you grace for what you face. As long as you walk this planet, God will give you grace for what you face. How could you handle it if you didn't have that? Couldn't, could you? But he does, and he will. How many of you have ever experienced God giving you grace for something you needed to face? Would you raise your right hand? He gives you grace for it. Aren't you glad? And you know what? He has all the way to this point, hadn't he? And he'll have all the way down to the end of your days. He'll do that. It'd be hard to handle this old world without that, wouldn't it? Okay. So this is an amazing fact that he allows him to do that. Refresh could also mean they just providing him with provisions, too, for his journey. We just don't know. But it could be an indicator that there was something wrong with him. So he gives him liberty to visit with his friends in the text. Would that have encouraged him, too? So you see all the Lord's doing, too, to fellowship with. Centurion liked him. He lets him go, refresh himself with his friends. So the Lord is preparing him for his trip, getting him ready to go on it, the full trip anyhow. All right, let's continue to look. Verse 4, and when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. The way the winds were blowing is instead of going, if you look at your map, you see where Cyprus was at. It would have been better to go the other direction, but you just pretty much was up to the direction of the wind the way that you went on your journey. So let's go ahead and read on down through here. They had launched from thence. We sailed under Cyprus because the winds were contrary. And when we had sailed over the sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. Let's keep reading. And the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing unto Italy, and he put us therein. Now remember, they're changing ships here. Had a ship that went up to this particular area, but they find a ship that came up from Alexandria. Now, what would happen is Egypt supplied Rome with grain, and there was a great shipping market that went right through there. So they find this ship, and it's going to Rome. So what happens is just this would happen on occasions. They'd not only take the grain, but they would make money off passengers, too. So what happens is the centurion puts the prisoners on this particular ship. and it's from Alexandria, and it's going where at? It's going to Italy, and they put us therein. Now, all told, it'll take 3 ships to get where they're going. Does anybody know why? This ship here is going to sink. This ship here, the one right here, is eventually going to sink, and they'll have a 3rd ship, okay, that's going to go there. So all told, to get from where he's at to Rome, there's going to be 3 ships that he's on. I want you to remember that. Verse 7, and when we had sailed slowly many days, remember, you was pretty well up to the wind, wasn't you? You was depending on the wind to get you there. And scarce were come over Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under creek over against Salome. And hardly passing it, we came into a place which is called the Fair Havens, near unto the city of Lycia. Verse 9. And when much time was spent, when sailing was now dangerous, because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished him. Let's stop here just for a little bit. Just kind of bring you up to where we need to be. When it says the fast, that's the great day of atonement. That's the great day of atonement. We always call the day of atonement a feast day, but that's not an accurate day. That's not an accurate definition of the day of atonement. It wasn't a feast day. It was a fast. They never ate on the day of atonement. You read about in Leviticus 16, they afflicted their souls. And they were mourning over their sin. And they were fasting. Boy, I was really going to go into this tonight, but I'm going to do probably, unless it changes, you know how you can change when you're a preacher about sermons, but I will probably do a message on Easter Sunday morning on Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. I love to preach that message. And it's been years since I've done it, and I think I'll do that on that Sunday morning and not tonight. I just want to mention what it is. Now, Yom Kippur gives you the date that this was. It was the 10th day of the 7th month. That was the Jewish calendar, the Jewish month Tishrei. Now, that's equivalent to our late September and early October. That's the equivalent dates. They go back, and most date this at 59 A.D., and they said the Day of Atonement that year was on October the 5th. Now, the reason why I give you the date of October is November through March, you never traveled on the Mediterranean. It's too dangerous. Has everybody got that in mind? November 11th through the latter part of March, you didn't travel in the winter on the Mediterranean. It was far too dangerous, notorious for storms. Well, since this is the time of the fast, or the time of the Day of Atonement, it's already late September and October. It's already dangerous for them to attempt to go there. So this brings up a debate. Now here's the debate in verse 10. Let me read the latter part of verse 9. Paul admonished them, and he said to them, "Sirs, I perceive." Now, I imagine that the Lord had somehow revealed to him that there's trouble coming. Or was Paul experienced on the sea? Well, absolutely. You look at in his missionary journeys, he traveled by through that Mediterranean Sea on all of his trips that he took, all of his missionary journeys. He traveled on the Mediterranean Sea. He was used to it. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, he mentions 3 times he went through a shipwreck. 3 times, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, 3 times he faced shipwreck. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, you can read about it when you go home. Well, in other words, he knew a little bit about the Mediterranean Sea. So he speaks up and he said, "Sirs, I perceive this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives." So he issues a warning here. Now, if they'd listened to him here, they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble. But the fact remains is this would have been expensive for them to winter here now. Basically, what he would have had them do was winter in this place and not travel and wait till the spring to travel on there. Well, that would have meant that the owner of that boat would have had to pay for all that. Plus, you had the provisions for the ones that were there. So that would have been a very expensive thing to do. So their choice was to go on a little bit farther to a better harbor than this one. Now let's go ahead and look at this. Verse 11. Let me flip my page over here. Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul. So he doesn't listen to the Apostle Paul. He listens to the owner. Now the master is the captain. That's the helmsman. It's the one that drives the ship, the one in charge of it. So the captain and the owner wanted to go on. And they wanted to go on to a better haven because if you look down at verse 12, it says because the haven that they were in was not commodious to winter in. It wasn't a good place to stay. Wasn't enough provisions to provide for everybody there. Plus, I also read that that harbor was a dangerous harbor as far as the depth and far as the waves rolling in is concerned. Wouldn't be a good place to be for the storm to happen either, if a storm did come. So they decide to move on. They decide to move on down the line. Now, notice what it says here. Let's go ahead and begin at verse 12. And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenicia and to winter, which is a haven of Crete that lieth toward the southwest and the northwest. And when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, they loosed there and they sailed close by Crete. Now look, everything looks good. Now watch all that they went by. Sounded good, didn't it? Fair Havens wasn't a good place to stay. You wouldn't want to winter there because it said it wasn't commodious. It wasn't a good place to, probably didn't have provisions to cover for them all, maybe. Probably dangerous because of the way the harbor was, as far as protection from the sea. The master of the ship, the captain said go. The owner said go. Where they was heading to wasn't really that. Phoenicia wasn't that far away. I think if I remember, like 40 or 50 miles, so it wasn't real far away to get to a more safe harbor. It looks like a great decision. Then they start out, Brother Larry, and when they start out, it says, that, see what it says in verse 13? The wind blew softly. So all the circumstances said what? Go. But what did Paul say? Don't go. The difference is, circumstances doesn't always mean that it's right. I just want to give you a warning about that. Circumstances doesn't always mean that the decision is the right one. All the circumstances can be pointing towards something, but that's why you always ask counsel of God. And actually, who gave the best counsel in this text was Paul. Paul. He's the one that knew the Lord. He's the one that gives the best counsel. And though all the circumstances said yes, this wasn't a good decision to make. I've made decisions before and everything pointed yes. But it wasn't a good decision. You always ask counsel of who? Our God. He's a wonderful counselor. He's your counselor. He's who you ask. You ask counsel of him. Sometimes people go to make a great big decision in their life, and they'll come and ask the preacher. And our first question, I said, have you talked to the Lord about this thing yet? And they'll look at you with that deer in the headlight look. Well, that's the first person you need to ask. You ask the Lord first. You ask counsel of him. He knows the end from the beginning. And you know what? He'll direct your path. Commit your way to the Lord, and he'll direct your path. So always ask counsel of him. Well, let's go ahead and move to verse 14. But not long after there arose a tempestuous wind called Euroclydon. Now, the idea of that is it's a northeaster. A northeaster, they call it. And if you really want to know what it is, it's a hurricane. They went into a hurricane or a typhoon. This is the kind of wind that it was. This was a major, major thing. Now, I can't think of anything more frightening than a storm at sea. Well, if I don't swim, I can probably get from here to that front pew, but that'd be about it. But to be out, and me and Pop has been fishing before and got caught in storms, and I was like a cat on the side of that. But you'd had to beat me off the side of that coat or that boat anyhow. It's a frightening thing. If you've ever been caught in the middle of the river or whatever in a major storm, especially lightning, it's a frightening thing. But this was a hurricane. And they weren't in vessels like we travel in, like our ships are today. These were wooden vessels. And they would put the boards, they'd fold the boards together, and they were held with pitch. Think about it. They didn't use nails or rivets or things of that nature. They was held together with pitch so they could break apart. And that was the danger of it. And what they'd do is they'd put ropes around them, and it tightened them. It would hold them together in storms. And you're going to see they're going to do that here. That's why this is such a great text. You can learn how they dealt with things back in these days with regard to storms. So I mean to tell you, this was a hurricane, or we would call it a typhoon. So who was right in the advice? Paul, he knew the Lord. He's close to the Lord. God directed the path. All the circumstances said, do it this way, and do it. Verse 15, it says, and when the ship was caught and could not bear unto the wind, we let her drive. Well, what they would have done is they pulled down their sails. Because what would happen with the wind would have just ripped them up. So they just pulled their sails down and let the wind take them. It just blew them all over the place. One time me and Dad was, remember that, Pop? My time me and Dad was out fishing in the backwater. And the skies looked like purple. He kept going, we need to go. We need to go. I was catching bass, hollis, they were monsters. Biggest, huh? They're growing each time I tell it. Did you notice it? They were monsters. Larry, I'm telling you, they were the best bass I ever caught. But I was catching one right after the other. And I said, I ain't going in yet. Well, boy, I wish I'd listened to him. But we got over there. It was in that backwater right below Poca High School. Brother Coy, I stood up to push that boat out into the Kanawha, and a tornado came. And it blew me and him both all the way up in there. It's like dropping your sail and letting her go. That's what we did. And you talk about paralyzed. That's when little Jeff was a little boy. I tell you how scared I was. There was that train trestle up there. I put him between those piers because I was afraid it would blow him away. Remember that? Yeah, I was paralyzed, so I've been scared of him ever since. And you know, little Jeff is still scared of him today. He still remembers that storm. So they just let it go. When I read over here, they just let the boat go. We know what that feels like, Pop, because all back up in there that we went. Poor Pop, we were standing there, and the that rain was coming. It hailed, and the rain was coming. We was froze plumb to death. And I looked over at Pop, and then that nose of his, that rain was dripping off the end of that. And he said, you know, I got two ponchos. And I said, well, right now would be a good time to break them out. He said, they're down at the house. That's what he said. Never forget that. I just looked at him and laughed. But anyhow, that's the situation they were in, except it was a whole lot worse. We was on land. They could see no land. How frightening of a situation this would have been. Verse 16, and running under a certain island, which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat. Now, when they went under this island, what would that have done? Now watch this. See the island? When they went under it, what would this have done? It took some of the wind off of them. So that gave them an opportunity to work on the boat. And that's what they're getting ready to do. So that would have took, as long as they was behind this thing, they could do a little work to the boat. And that's what they do. Now, notice what they do in verse 17. When they had taken up, they used helps, undergirding the ship. Remember we talked about the undergirding, using the ropes, getting them tight. Why would they do that? Because the waves. If you ever seen a ship at sea, it'll go up and it'll bang on the waves. It busted apart. So they use the undergirders. They use ropes to undergird it and hold it together. And it says, unless they should fall into quicksands. Now the idea of quicksands there is the word shoal. It means it was a place that wasn't real deep and you run up on the shoals in the sand. That's the idea of it. And what happens if you'd run up into the sand? You would stick and it'd tear the whole back of your boat off. So that's what that's referring to. Quicksands. Not quicksands like we're talking about getting in quicksands and being sucked under. It's sand. It's shoal is the idea of the word. So they strake sail and they were driven. And being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. Now this is another thing you'd do. Not only did they get the time to put on the girders, to tighten up the undergirding on the ship, but they'd also lighten it. What happens is they'd take on water, and what would that do to it? It'd make it go deeper in the water, and you'd take on more water till you'd sink. So what they'd do is they'd throw off some of the merchandise. They'd get rid of some of the stuff. So they do that. Actually, they're going to be doing it twice. It mentions it in verse 18. They lighten the ship. You remember in the Old Testament, we have another example of a great storm at sea? Book of Jonah. Yeah. Book of Jonah. What did they do? They lightened the ship. Now, eventually, they throwed him over because he said to throw him over. But they lightened the ship first. They throwed everything off. They showed everything off. They throwed everything off of it. So that's what they're doing. They're getting rid of some of the merchandise that's on it. They're getting rid of some of the things that were heavy on it that they didn't need. Verse 19, the third day. This is the third day. Can you imagine just going through this for a couple hours? This is 3 days. I mean, it would just be, you reckon you could sleep? No, there wouldn't be nobody sleeping. You just didn't know when you was going down. I mean, this was a frightening situation that they were in. And Paul had warned them. Paul had told them. He had given them a warning before they ever left. But he didn't listen. All the circumstances said go, but the man of God said no. Don't do it. He didn't listen. Now they're in a typhoon in the Mediterranean Sea at the bad time of the year, too, by the way. Now notice down in verse 19, the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling. And some people suggest that that's the furniture. It's just basic. I don't know. Some of the good writers said it was furniture, but this would be things they didn't need. Whatever you didn't need, you got rid of. Furniture didn't do you any good if the ship was too heavy, did it? You get rid of things. I tell you what, all of these things were important items. But when you're faced with your life, it don't mean nothing. I just want you to see that. These are probably some pretty expensive things they would throw overboard. But if it's going to kill you, you're not going to need it, are you? It really brings you down to what's most important in life, isn't it? I say it all the time, and I say it again. People live their entire life for things and possessions and boats and cars and money and retirement, and they're temporary. The day you die, all that matters is whether or not you have eternal life, whether or not you know Jesus Christ as your Savior. And you're not a success in this world if you die and go to hell at the end of your days. What people need to be concerned about is their soul. We in this land drive and drive and drive to be successful. And I'm not saying you shouldn't get a good education. I'm not saying you shouldn't get a good trade. And I'm saying you shouldn't try to make good money for your family. But I'm trying to tell you that the main thing is the spiritual things. And number one on your priority list should be your God. Over everything else, your number one priority should be your God. And if He's not your number one priority, and He's down your priority list, whatever is over top of Him is an idol. What's main thing in your life is revealed by what you talk about the most and where you spend the majority of your time at. God should be the most important thing. Jesus should be the most important thing in our lives. Nothing takes priority over Him. Nothing takes priority over Him. And our lives should bear that out. Our talk should bear that out. And our actions should bear that out. He's the main thing, Andy Deacon. He's the main thing. It's one of the deep statements of the old Dean of Bancroft. You got to keep the main thing, the main thing. And he's so true. You got to keep the main thing, the main thing. And that's the Lord. Don't you love Him? We'd be going to hell if it wasn't for Him. Look what He's done for us. Opened our eyes, saved our souls, keeps us. I don't know when, but at the end of this thing, I'm going to heaven. That's a glorious thing. Well, in this time of trial and trouble, in this shipwreck, all that furniture and all that commodities didn't mount to a hill of beans, did it? Well, they're about ready to go under. If you go down in that sea, you're going. See what's important. Let's go ahead and keep doing. I'm not going to get into verse. I'm going to stop at verse 21. Verse 20. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared. Now, why is that a big deal? That's what they went by. They didn't have a compass. And they didn't have maps. They went by the sun and they went by the stars. So they went many days. And they never seen the sun or stars, which means what? They didn't have any idea where they was at. Now, that would have been scary too. It was dark. It had been dark for days. You had all that wind and that rain blowing. It's being tossed too. Can you imagine what a frightening situation this indeed would be that they were in? So they didn't even know where they was at. They didn't know where they was going. They couldn't have any direction finder whatsoever. They didn't know what was going on. So they went many days, and neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest laid on us. I mean, it didn't let up none. This tempest was constant that hit them. It says in all hope, verse 20, all hope that we should be saved was taken away. Not only was it dark, Coy, not only had the wind still blowing, not only was the wave still coming in, not only did they not know where they was at or what they, where they were going at the time, the men of the ship had lost all hope, had done give up. They had already give up. Everybody give up but one. And that was the Apostle Paul. And probably his two buddies too. He never gave up. And we'll see that in verse 22. I'll let you read that next time. Verse 21. And after a long abstinence. I mean, Paul held his tongue for a bit. Now listen what Paul stood forth. Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, sirs, you should have hearkened to me. And not have loosed from Crete, and to have gained this harm and loss. Now, why would Paul do that? To say, aha, see how goofy he was for not listening to me? So that they'd listen to him in the future. That's why he did it. He's about to give him some advice, and going to, right from this point on, the captain of this vessel is Paul. Everything's going to change here now. They're going to look to him for leadership. And that's the only reason he did that. You should have listened to me. I told you what was going to happen. So this would secure that they would listen to him in the future. I'm going to stop right here. And what we'll do is the best parts, verse 22 through 25. And we'll look at that. You read that at home. You go home and read the rest of this. I'm glad I never skipped over that part that we looked at, because that laid the foundation for everything. And you get a little bit look at what they went through. And you know what, folks? God was going to deliver him out of this, and they wasn't going to lose one life. Not one life would be lost. So you read the rest of this. And come back next Wednesday night and bring somebody with you, and we'll deal with the rest of it. Okay? Let's all stand.